Welcome into another edition of the Email Design Podcast. We are your hosts for the program. I am Kevin Mandeville.
And I am Jason Rodriguez.
And we've got another guest episode of the podcast here coming in to interview today, Mr. Dan Denny, who's a front-end developer at Code School. Dan, welcome into the program.
Thank you for having me. This is awesome, guys.
Yeah, so excited to have you on. Feels like we've been good friends for a while, and I think you have a lot of unique things and perspectives to share about coming from sort of both web and email work that you're involved in. So the one thing we love hearing about, Dan, to get things started off, is we love hearing about people's stories, how they got started just learning basic HTML and CSS. How did you get started?
So I'm probably one of the weirdos that didn't get started on MySpace. I was actually looking for a career change, and this was back in 2001, and I went to school for like A+ Net Plus, so like computer repair and networking stuff, and one of the instructors showed me HTML, and quite literally HTML only, because back then you were still like putting everything in line. It was before like style sheets were really a popular thing.
So was it just from there you just kind of got excited and took over from there, or did you ever take any like formal classes or anything like that?
From there I got excited and it became a hobby, and so I did that, and then got into Flash and all that fun stuff, kind of making like photo sites of my daughter's pictures and stuff like that. Yeah. And then it just remained a hobby until like 2008 when I tried applying for my first job.
So was that, outside of some of those projects, what was that first job? Was that with Code School, or was that with somebody else that you got your first job?
No, it was a small web design shop in St. Petersburg, Florida. And okay. So I applied for an SEO position, and I had to make a portfolio to even show them anything. Yeah. And they kind of liked the stuff enough that brought me on as a web designer at the time.
Nice. Was that mostly just doing kind of client work and stuff like that?
Yeah, small B2B, like small business sites,
yeah.
All static pages. You know, we'd do a Photoshop comp and turn it into some HTML and CSS.
Yeah, I feel like we all have that couple years or something doing kind of work like that, which is good introduction for it.
That's really hardcore, though, the fact that you got started like before CSS. It was just HTML attributes to get started with.
Oh, yeah, like frame sets and like all the weird stuff that used to go on back in the day. It was fun.
So it seems like email development wouldn't be that far from your kind of home territory at all.
No, I think that's why I take to it so well, and why I don't really like freak out about the tables or about the inlining, because that's quite literally what I learned. Like, I created table sites for years.
Yeah, I definitely came up more in the, like, at the early dawn of web standards and stuff, and it was very much like, Zeldman says this, like, do it this way, and that separation of everything. So I think the first couple of times I had to build an email, I felt very dirty, as most people do, but that's cool that you kind of came from that kind of old school background.
I think it makes a big difference just in outlook, you know, because, like, otherwise you're almost afraid to use a table for anything, even things that are supposed to have tables, like data.
Yep.
So your title is actually a front-end developer. So you do actually do a good amount of web work.
Yes.
But you also are involved in email.
Yeah, I'm like the sole email developer at Code School, but then I also work on various things on like our .com or our courses and stuff.
So when did you actually get started into doing email development?
In 2012, at the time, the guy that was leading the design team, Jason Van Loo, just kind of in a meeting was like, hey, we need to get a handle on our HTML emails, and so, Dan, you're going to be in charge of that.
So you just got thrown into it.
Yep.
So that was while you were already at Code School then?
Yes.
So it was just kind of, you started doing web design and then just got tasked with emails. But I feel like since then you've kind of grown to love email, and you've written a lot about it, which is awesome. You mentioned earlier that you're the only person doing email at Code School right now, right?
The only email builder, yeah. We have a small team that kind of goes into the whole creation process. So someone planning out the strategy, a copywriter, a project manager kind of keeps the tabs on everybody for that. But I'm the only one that does the actual like HTML, CSS.
Cool. So go ahead, Kevin.
Go ahead, Jason. Go
ahead. Well, no, I was just going to kind of build on that and ask you guys a little bit about your process, not so much from a building emails perspective, but how your team works together and what the typical process is for you guys to envision an email, actually go through copywriting, building, testing, all of that stuff.
Yeah, that's, you know, it's an evolving process all the time. But what we've been working at really well lately is if we have an upcoming promotional email, that's something we already kind of have scheduled. We know it's going to be a course launch or some feature launch or something. We get together. They'll have like the meeting. I'm usually not in those. And then they'll just kind of go over the goal for it. And then they'll draft up copy, everything, list out all the tasks in Asana. So it'll be like, okay, copy's due by this day. Then they'll build this day. Then we'll send and review this day and then launch the email on another day. And so all that kind of gets chopped up into pieces. And then I go through the build process and share it internally. And then we finally ship it. That's for a promo. Transactionals are usually a bigger meeting because we typically need a developer in there. And so that requires like planning out more resources on how to access data, how to plan something out, how to get something recurring.
Yeah. How many, I guess, what's your volume looking like between brand stuff and transactional emails?
Our list for promotionals is somewhere around 1.8, 1.9 million.
Woo.
And then, yeah. And then we send somewhere between 150 and 200,000 transactionals a month.
Wow, nice.
You want to talk about pressing the send button, the fear on that one?
Oh, man, I did it twice today. Twice. Nice. And I don't usually do the send buttons. Our marketing guy, Corey, typically does that, but he just had a baby, so I'm on send duty.
Just a cool 2 million email size for that one. That's pretty crazy. What ESPs do you use, just out of curiosity? Do you use multiple ESPs?
Sort of, yeah. We use MailChimp and the combo of MailChimp and Mandrill. So we're still on Mandrill with the changes. Everything was already built into there for us. And actually, the change didn't really affect us in any way other than you have to log into it through MailChimp. But yeah, so we use all our promotionals and currently our onboarding. We use automation for our onboarding, which technically could possibly be or should be in Mandrill, but it was easier to get it going and up and running with just using their automation.
So what is, I mean, you have about 2 million users or subscribers rather on your email list, receiving emails. So what does your audience breakdown look like for Code School? Like what's sort of your environment breakdown between mobile, desktop, webmail? Like what are some of the popular clients that you typically see out of your audience?
Yeah, I'm super spoiled when it comes to this. So like when I read people's posts or read people's hardships about creating email, I'm like, ooh, that's rough. Because we sit at about 1.5 to 2% outlook. And the rest is primarily Apple products and Gmail. And mobile changed. Remember back when you guys were releasing like a series of things, like showing like the growing thing of mobile and when it crossed 50% and everything? Mm-hmm. We were right in there with that. So I remember I was so excited because I read this article by Ben Chestnut, and he was talking about that. And that's what initially got me excited about email, was the ability to be responsive and make it look really good on phones. And at the time, we were at like 47%, and then we got up to like 53 or 55% before Gmail made their change to the images. And so now, like, it's back down to like 30 or 40%, but that's not realistic. I know it's still up that high. It's just, it's sourcing differently based on like Gmail's analytics.
So you're seeing over half of your audience on mobile for the most part.
Yeah.
And that's largely, it sounds like then between iOS and Gmail app.
Yes, it seems so. Yeah. Where you get like 52% like registers for Apple. I think in the client list, it's like Apple client. I forget how they list it in MailChimp, but it kind of like registers as an Apple open. And we get, it's like 53% of that or something like that.
I'm kind of curious if that compares to just Code School's audience. I don't know if you guys track like usage for actually going through courses and stuff like that. But I know you guys have a couple of courses on iOS development and then web development, things like that. If that kind of Apple focus breaks down similarly with the people actually taking those courses too.
Yeah, I think it has a lot to do with the development community as well. You know, like the development, especially like we got really popular with Ruby And the Ruby environment is way better on Mac than it is on Windows. Yeah. And so, like, that being the bulk of our initial community probably had a huge impact on us getting a lot more people just using the default Apple Mail and then having an iPhone.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a fortunate position to be in.
yeah, it's been nice. I get to use a lot of fun stuff.
Yeah. That's probably caused a lot of trade-offs too, though, because, I mean, it's nice that your Outlook percentage is that low, but if you have a lot of people opening up on the Gmail app, but it's, I mean, I'd rather have them open out.
That's on, true too. Outlook, yeah.
You know? Oh yeah, no, yeah, it's totally. I think I've gotten records stating that Gmail is my least favorite client. So.
Yeah, which, well, hopefully we'll be changing soon, I guess.
Yeah.
Before we talk about that, though, I'm curious. You've written a fair amount about your actual development process. And a lot of the tools you use to actually build emails, manage that entire build process. I'd love it if you'd go really in depth into what it looks like to build a Code School email.
Sure. And that, again, has changed, you know, over time. But I have found, like, what is my ideal flow these days. And not just because I'm here on the podcast, but that is Litmus Builder. Just the changes that have come since last year's email design conference when you guys previewed that, the basically like in-page testing and the automation stuff that's happened in there has made it so that basically what I start off with is I start with copy, and I actually did a little, it was a fun thing to do. I just turned on ScreenFlow and like went from like zero to nothing to creating two versions of an email, and it took me like 55 minutes, but I was able to speed it up and like bring it back down. But it's quite literally, I just go grab the copy, I paste it into some prefab snippets. So I'll open up Builder, I'll type like base and put my base file in there. And that kind of has our header, footer stuff all taken care of. And then I'll just paste in copy in using my snippets that are built in for everything, for text, H1s, everything that I need. And then I will just go back through and manually make inline style changes, and I do still write all of my stuff inline. I don't use the CSS inlining, just, and that's just out of habit and out of like it's actually faster for me that way. And then I'll take that builder link and pop it into our Slack, and that's where our internal group reviews it. They'll give me any feedback, anything I need to change, and then I'll eventually take that code and pop it into MailChimp or Mandrill.
Nice. So all at this point, all of your building, all of your testing happens right through Builder then?
Yeah. The only thing that happens outside of Builder is editing images and then uploading them to MailChimp.
Nice. Now, this is a pretty drastic change from, I've read some of your stuff on your old process. If you could kind of walk through that, I know you are a big proponent of using build processes and static site generators to handle a lot of the tasks that like partials and snippets take care of for you now in Builder. Could you walk us through that too? And
yeah, sure. I think that the biggest challenge with email is always time. There's so much stuff, like, it, you know, when you have to test or when you want to try anything new, you have to do a lot of testing and a lot of different things to figure out what's going on. And so I try to take anything that I can not repeat and put that in some sort of process. And it used to be that I had to run that offline. So I used a build process. It was originally in Jekyll and then in Middleman. And so what I would do is I would have partials and I would have snippets and I would have all that stuff offline in my own editor. And I would build pretty close to the same way I do in Builder now, but the end process of that would have been me now running a build step and then pasting the code into Litmus and running my tests. And then taking that code that was finally done and putting it into MailChimp at the end.
So what do you think, I mean, and you've written a blog post about this, which we'll add in the show notes, but I mean, you transitioned. I mean, what did you see were like the key things that were more advantageous for you to actually make a switch from going a local build process type of workflow to using an online editor in Litmus Builder? What are sort of the pros and cons to that?
Sure. The big thing for me originally was that I had to have the ability to have partials. And that's because I have a different layout for MailChimp and Mandrill. So I'll have a different header, footer, like those kind of things. So I needed to be able to have all that stuff in there without having to touch it every single time. And that was one of my biggest reasons for using a build step. But then, like, that got changed in Builder. So now, like, I have the ability to have partials. I never have to touch my header and footer code. They're all in there. So that was my big step. And then one of the hugest pros is Litmus was already a step in my flow. Like, it was like I went from offline into Litmus into MailChimp. And that ability to, that cutting off that start offline, moving into online and Litmus anyway, saves me a ton of time. And the ability, what I would have to do before is I would edit locally, paste the code into Litmus, and then test it. And if I need, you know, I always do something that breaks something in Outlook. Like, it's small, but I'll forget, like, a background color or something like that. And now I would have to, like, go edit that locally, run my build, copy and paste the code into Litmus, retest. The ability to just tweak that thing and hit save and have it show that I made the right change for Outlook saves me probably 2 to 3 minutes for every change that I need to make to an email. That was, like, huge to me. So the combination of partials, the automated testing, those are the two huge things that made the difference to me.
And just so that we're fair and balanced, I mean, what are some of the cons that you see or the trade-offs that you've had to make?
Oh, well, you can't directly work offline. So, like, that is one of the challenges. And I do fly a lot. I can say that it holds up pretty well on airplane Wi-Fi, but there are times where you're not connected at all. And so I've just had to have a backup system for that. And one of the things that I do regardless is I back up emails that I create in Builder locally in GitHub anyway. So one additional step that you had to do as, like, a fail safe for whenever it wouldn't be available, and this could be like an outage for your local stuff or Builder itself, is just have local files that you could edit and then have your snippets locally if you build that way. But worst case scenario, I could always take, like, a layout and edit one locally because I have them all stored locally and then backed up in GitHub.
I'm kind of curious about one of the things you guys are kind of known for, or at least I love, is that when you send out emails for upcoming courses, the visual design of the emails is very much wedded to the ideas in the course. The best example of this I've seen is you guys did in a course on Angular 2, in which you use CSS transforms to kind of skew the content of the email. So it gave this very Angular look. What's the kind of process of coming up with ideas like that? I'm sure it's working with the design team and the content creators and stuff, but how do you actually get those ideas, implement them, and get them approved?
So that's interesting. And so we have designers, and they create this collection of assets for a course. And most of it gets used in the course, but not all of it. And they'll keep this little folder, of, like, my little treasure chest of, like, things that didn't make it in that were working or in there. And so what I do when I'm going to create a launch email is I jump into that folder, and I just start looking through it all. And most of the times I'm familiar with the technology too, so I have an idea of, like, the technology and then the kind of the theme, the vibe that we are going for the course. So I grab those assets and I start putting them together, and then I just make decisions along the way. So, like, Angular, on top of it being, like, the word Angular being in there, the brand itself was actually tilted. And so to me, it almost looked weird to have, like, a tilted brand sitting on flat, normal text. So it mm-hmm. seemed like, oh, let's just be kind of fun. Let's turn it and see what happens. And then I really don't... We get feedback from the team, but I usually don't get too much, like, take that off or don't do that kind of female. We like to push things and do things a little crazy, so...
All right, we're going to talk about, you actually created a course on HTML emails at Fork Code School. We're going to talk about that in a second, but we just want to take a quick break to let everybody know that they can catch the podcast at emaildesignpodcast.com. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, and YouTube. So again, full archive at emaildesignpodcast.com, or subscribe to wherever you like to receive the content. Leave some nice reviews. That'd be awesome. You know, make sure... we're getting up there. Spread the email love. You can also tweet along with the hashtag Email Design Podcast. And we have a great 14-day free trial of Litmus. You can just go to litmus.com/gift card, input the coupon code podcast for 14 days of free Litmus. I don't really think we really need to, we just kind of talked about Litmus Builder, so we don't need to pitch that too much. But if you want to do some of the things that Dan just mentioned with your email and building and testing iteratively, you can just go to litmus.com/gift card and input the coupon code podcast to check it out. And yeah, we'll also give a plug for, you know, Code School here, Dan. You can go to codeschool.com. And I want to talk about this course that you made. You actually created a course. So, I mean, you know, Code School, you can take whatever types of courses you're interested in learning in, right?
Right.
So everything from Ember to actual emails now. So it'd be great for you just to talk about the experience of, you know, what was it like actually being a content creator for the course and coming up with something that would be easily digestible to everybody on HTML email?
It was nerve-wracking, like really, really bad. Because I had been in it for about 2 years, I think, at that point, and our emails were well-received, that was one of the reasons I got the nod, like, hey, why don't you create a course on this? And so now I had to become, like, you know, in air quotes, an expert on this. And basically all the things I had learned was from everyone in the community. So I had to kind of, like, process all of the things that I had learned from all of these spaces, Jason's book, blog posts from like everybody, and put that into some way to describe like zero to finish of like how to create a fun email. Because like I really wanted to make it so that it was something creative. It wasn't just here's how to put some text and an image into an email. I wanted to make it kind of fun along the way. And so I had to like divide that up into steps, get all the crazy looks from people here, like what are you talking about? What do you do here? Then I had to kind of like reach out and make sure I was doing things the right way and with the most recent standards. And like even during the course build is when Yahoo fixed their support. So like they fixed their attribute selector issue. And so I had to like make the call then, like, is it going to stay fixed? Is it going to be okay? Do I teach it? Do I not teach it? And I ended up not teaching it and just leaving it out. And luckily that's worked out so far.
Yeah. So how long is the course, or like what can you expect for users who are thinking about, oh, checking this out, what can they expect from the course content and what would they be doing?
I would imagine you would probably take, for anyone like brand new to HTML email, or it would probably be about 2 to 3 hours, and you're going to start from basically creating like static HTML inline CSS for Gmail, and then from there you're going to learn the nuance of like a series of clients and how and why you need to do things in certain ways all the way through, kind of on a client by client basis. And in that I use a specific approach that is dubbed the hybrid coding approach. And this is the one fun thing about creating content is I've actually switched away from that mostly myself. So I have like a blog post in there that I paste in at the bottom of the like resources now as like an alternative way to do like single column content.
That's actually interesting. Let's just touch on that briefly, because I know you've blogged about this. So what table structure approach are you using currently for Code School emails?
So I don't know what it's called. I call it the Mark Robbins.
Is it the table of your dreams?
Yes, the table of your dreams. Yes. So the basic premise is rather than using a ghost table that's going to be restricted, that's going to use a Microsoft-specific code for Outlook, what it is it's a 3-cell row with 2 empty cells and then a width on the cell that you want. And that allows the like natural behavior of table cells to work. And so it'll be as big as it can up until the width. It's kind of like a max width, but before max width really existed. And so I use that for my single column emails. But if I have to get into a double column, that's when I go back to hybrid, which is what they would learn in the course.
Gotcha. And so do you just like the simplicity of I call it the 3-table cell approach.
Yeah.
Is that why you prefer using it for single column layouts?
Yeah, it's cleaner code and it's less code. And so that's a big thing to me, just having, you know, anything that I can not have in an email, they're already so big that anytime I can cut code, I'm going to do it. And so in for anything single column, I'm not putting in ghost tables.
Gotcha. So we'll add in the, because I know you wrote a blog post about it, and we'll add in Mark's post as well. Great resource. But just to wrap up on the Code School course, so people can check that out at codeschool.com, and it's just part of one of the regular courses that you can have when you sign up. And we actually did a like a workshop, what do you call it, a workshop together.
Yeah.
When I did. Which I don't know. Hopefully that's still relevant. Gosh, we'd have to.
It is. No, it's totally is. Like until Gmail changes, everything we did is good.
True. And then once Gmail changes, then we all have to go back and rewrite all that.
Well, you'll just we'll just have to do another one, Dan. We'll have to head back down to Florida. What's the actual name of the course? It's got like a cool theme to it.
Yeah,
too,
it's
right?
Unmasking HTML Emails, and it has like this Lucha Libre theme to it. So it's like. Wrestlers.
Nice.
Very cool.
On top of writing about, you know, your building process, I know you've written a little bit and talked a little bit about actually like tracking Code School emails and reporting on some of that stuff. So what's your typical process like for seeing, determining whether or not campaigns are successful?
Again, this would be, I'm going to be a broken record. This evolves over time as well. But everything that I do in there is still pretty manual. I haven't found any type of reporting in our ESPs or in any ESP that matches specifically the things that I want to get out. We really care about a very limited amount of metrics, which is like clicks per unique open and open rate. We, you know, like monitor, you want to make sure that you're monitoring that, but it's primarily clicks per unique open is like my biggest thing. And so I will create an email, and I used to use that offline tool that I had, and I would keep the metrics rate in the file of the email itself. But as I got away from that, I just created a Google Docs spreadsheet, and that has every email that is going for our transactionals, and then key promotional ones. I don't do it for every single promotional one, but key promotional ones I put in there so that we can track things like course launch emails over time to see how they perform against each other. And so in that document, I'll list off our open rate, our clicks per unique open, and then now what I do is the quality score. And I don't have a link for that, but there's an excellent article on determining this quality score where you basically take the number of clicks and subtract abuse reports and spam or unsubscribes. And there's a little math in there, and then it like determines like your overall quality score for your email. So that is the most simple way of judging our emails that I can find now. And I use it for every one. I love it.
Nice. Do you find that actually reporting on that and that data you get back informs a lot of design decisions or how you guys actually rethink your strategy?
It absolutely does. I think it's really, really important, and it gives me the chance to judge like how well an email like maybe design works, but then we can also use it to test like how that compares to content that we're releasing too. So like while the HTML emails was fun thing for me to build, isn't the most popular thing on Code School, and so you can kind of compare like, oh, did this email perform less than others because of something I did in it, or is it that the course is also not performing in the same way.
Yeah.
So I can use that data to compare with other things. And so if I have mine in a good way to show that, then I can compare it really quickly and easily to what other data we have.
Nice. So you guys do much like A/B testing or anything like that?
Yeah, we do a lot of subject line testing. Corey like typically handles that. I don't do too much of it myself. For a little while we were doing layout stuff when MailChimp kind of like added that in as a way to test. But we haven't done it too much lately. At the most, it'd be like a different content for a button type of thing.
Yeah. Is that more like a symptom of lack of time or you didn't see as many good results from it?
I am like once in a while we'll get something really big that would be significant. But I think it's part of the fact that a lot of the emails we send are the same kind of thing, that you don't see significant shifts in the emails, like in the performance of it. Like, you can almost do an AA test and get the same variance that your AB test gets. So it's kind of more, it's when we do some kind of monetary offer, that's where we'll see the big thing. So like some kind of discount. I've actually had, I remember one design that like overpaid my salary 1 year just because like it did so well. And like that was a result of an AB test, and we tested a button in like two different ways. And the one like significantly made it better. And it turns out I broke it in like Android, but yeah, it had like a little overlay on the button, like putting the discount banner on top of the button. And that like made a humongous difference. So
nice. Cool. So getting on to some recent news, specifically things like the Microsoft Limitless partnership, and even more recently, the Gmail announcement that they're going to be supporting, you know, media queries and embedded CSS. What are your thoughts on how that affects not only the email community, but your kind of day-to-day work?
Yeah, so the Microsoft one affected me less, me individually, but I think it affects the community hugely. So I think the fact that, like, a client, a major client, was talking with a major testing company and announcing that to the community was like a huge thing for everyone to see. And I think that might have even lit the fire under an announcement that came from Gmail. I mean, I can't say that for sure, but it didn't make a whole lot of sense for them to announce this and then have us waiting, counting the days and like testing emails constantly for it. But it felt like it kind of shifted, like, hey, we're paying attention. And I think that's been, Yahoo kind of led that. They were like the coolest client for a little while there, like the most responsive client. And now we have the two biggest ones out there talking with everyone too, which is fantastic.
Is that going to, so with the Gmail announcement though, is that going to change
everything?
How you actually, everything? Like, are you going to update your coding techniques? Your build process, like all
yeah,
that
so
stuff?
The one thing I'm torn on is I really do want to see whether or not it applies to everything in the Gmail community. So I'm a little hesitant on that. There's been a lot of rumors back and forth on whether or not it's going to support, you know, third party emails and stuff like that. So we'll see. But if I can, or if it is supported well enough that I feel it's a good decision, I will, yes, start everything new, and it will be writing without, you know, writing as regular CSS. And then still using Builder, it's the same thing because it all, you know, it's all right there. But I will be writing everything in there. I've already created a template for it, like ready to go, like just to test when, as soon as it's ready.
Yeah. I think we probably all have a couple of files laying around. If this actually hits and it works well, then I'm switching.
So Dan,
this,
you're in a unique position because you have such a small Outlook audience. Would you actually consider, I mean, you could certainly write semantic HTML and CSS with the separation of content and styling, but would you also possibly contemplate just creating tableless emails altogether with such a low Outlook audience?
I've gotten so close. And the one thing is I can't stand to not have the spacing that I want, like between things. And I've even debated a couple of times, just instead of using like a wrapper ghost table, like just having in my snippet being like, whenever I do like padding top, like make a ghost table that has that number in it, and just kind of like have a semantic email that just has like ghost tables for spacing between paragraphs or something like that. I will probably play with something along those lines. It would be cool just because, like you said, we are in a unique opportunity because of our audience. It'd be cool to be one of the people that can do that. So I kind of want that, but we'll see.
Yeah, I know I'm definitely being a big proponent of just doing sort of ghost tables and trying to be as semantic as possible with everything that we can be. But we'll see. We have more consideration on our end in that area.
Yeah. You have to think much bigger than I do. I have a limited community and kind of a very tech community too.
So one of the things I want to talk about, so you have your foot in the email world, and that's like a big part of your job, which is awesome. But you you are a front end developer, and you have, it's kind of cool. You have your foot in both worlds, which is sort of a unique perspective on everything, in my opinion. But one of the things that you are sort of well known for is that you actually were one of the main organizers for the Front End Design Conference. I mean, could you just talk about sort of your experience with starting that conference up, which has been sort of one of the staple events in the front end community?
Oh, sure. So back in 2008, I went to my first conference. So I had been in the industry like as a whole for about a year. And I had spent that year like learning from people in the community. Same thing as when I got into email. Like everyone that shares blog posts and tweets things and all that stuff, you learn from all of the stuff that they put out there. And so I went to this conference in New York and it was fantastic. I came back to Florida and I was like, I want more of that. And there wasn't one. And so I was like, well, we can do one. And so I invited people that I had been learning from for that whole year, first year of my web development career, and just invited them out to speak on a single day, and got enough people to come out that we did it again. And then we did it for like 6 or 7 years.
Which is a long time. And I mean, the fact that you were pretty much spearheading it, you know, it was very much, you know, a collection of individuals, right? Whereas compared to something like the Email Design Conference has sort of the backing of Litmus behind it. I mean, that's just incredible. What do you think has been like one of your biggest takeaways from running the conference and just, you know, learning everything that you have, both putting that on and then enjoying it somewhat as an attendee?
Oh, yeah. I would think that one of the biggest things that I learned was that everybody in the community is human. And, you know, like we'll see like a lot of, I don't know, like the star thing that kind of comes up, and you almost feel intimidated to go up to talk to people and everything. But because this was a family run event, like we would go pick up everyone from the airport and just like, you know, like if you were coming in to speak, like we had to pick you up because it was just, it was like us, that was it. And so, so like in that you get to talk to people and you just see like everybody's kind of the same thing. Like everyone just, you know, normal and human. And the one thing I would say when you go to conferences is don't be afraid to go up and talk to the speakers or ask questions, because we all, you know, have our expertise, but then we're absent in other areas, and then we're all just kind of figuring things out as we go.
Yeah, and I have to thank you. You actually invited me to speak at the Front End Design Conference a few years ago, which was really one of the first times I spoke at like a web conference about email, which was I had a blast, and yeah, you did such a great job just hosting, and it, everything was just perfect. And that's kind of how we started to get to know each other personally, which was a lot of fun and really cool. So, I mean, you've put that conference on, and you've also been to the Email Design Conference, and yeah, you've had your foot in both communities. What do you see as sort of the key differences between the web and email communities?
So they're primarily the same. The one thing that I think is stronger in the email development community is the sharing. Like, and I was always impressed by how much was shared in the web development community, but I don't know if it's just because, you know, because of its reputation or because of like the hardships that you go through for creating an email, but it's just, there's a tighter bond amongst people and more sharing in the email development community than even in the web community.
Have you noticed anything really changed since you first got involved in the email community? Have there ever been any big shifts in, you know, the attitude amongst people or the type of things they're sharing?
We covered it a little bit, but like the biggest shift is that I've seen that we are like the community is getting listened to. And like before that, it was like when I first came on, you had kind of like a random collection of you know, hacks or blog posts on like how to do things all over the place. But I've seen this like organization of people getting all this stuff together, and then the clients listening and responding. And so like that's the biggest thing that I've seen that in the change since I've been around.
What do you think the email community needs to do now to sort of evolve? Because, I mean, certainly email is still behind compared to the web. I often like to say, yeah, we're only, you know, we're the same as the web, but just a decade behind. but what do you think the email community at large, that everybody as email marketers or designers and developers, what can the community do to sort of evolve and continue to take steps forward?
Right. Yeah. Well, I think we might be pretty close to like one of those be careful what you wish for scenarios. So like with front end, like one of the things that I was spoiled on is I kind of got to push my own agenda of what I thought was important. And I thought HTML email was important and it is. And so getting that out to regular web development is good. But as like it's going to be less of a niche if we get it closer to semantics and we're able to deliver a closer to a web experience in email, I think we're going to have to evolve what we work on to stay relevant or to stay like really, really active. There'll always be work, but I think what the next big push is going to be figuring out data. So like everything being data-driven sends. Jason, you've actually written on this, like the, I forget the thing, like the end of the blast or blast. I forget the...
I had a post called Blasphemy.
Blasphemy, yes. Yeah, so it's like the beginning of that, and it's a really hard thing to do. Even for a product that is really focused on it, like us, it would make a humongous difference if everything we sent was data-driven, and we still haven't been able to prioritize it. But if I was to learn, say, Ruby and learn how to access the data, like that would be a humongous thing, and I would actually move on to this next step of creating emails that are personalized and data driven.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think you know, at the conferences too, after Gmail announced this update, then there were a couple of people that were kind of concerned by this spelling the end of their jobs essentially. But I think it's going to be really exciting because we're going to be less focused on the hacks and breaking our backs trying to get this stuff to work everywhere, you know. And we can start focusing on much more challenging and interesting topics like, you know, the actual content, the personalization, the data driving, all that stuff's going to be really interesting.
Yeah, so I think it's more just a shift in where your focus is going to be. It's not like the end of it. I thought, give a shout out to Clinton, his series that was almost like a retirement series of tweets was really fantastic.
It's like his acceptance speech for the Oscars. Yeah. It was perfect. What piece of advice would you give to anybody just getting started in email?
Share what you learn. So I think one thing that a lot of people are afraid of when you jump into a new community is putting out anything that you have, anything you've created, because you're worried about comparing it to everyone else's. And I can promise you, I've experienced it firsthand a dozen, maybe 25 times, that if you just share something in this community, like, hey, this is what I've learned, is this how we're doing things, or like, this is what I learned how to create this, does anybody have a better way, people go out of their way to help you. And so putting that out there and sharing your templates, sharing your work, sharing your snippets, sharing your workflow, you will, if you just put it in that way of like, hey, this is what I'm doing, if anybody has advice, you will get it. And I've gotten fantastic advice in this community.
Does that advice differ for people that have been email developers or email designers for a long time?
I think so. I mean, you still want to share what you learn, but I think for existing email developers, the key thing is to build an email in a different way. So kind of like what we were talking about earlier, even if you might not be able to ship that at work yet, as soon as Gmail does it, everyone should take a crack at creating a semantic email and see what it's like, or try the, you know, the 3TD approach versus the hybrid or the spongy or whatever you're doing. Write one in a different way to understand it and then see what you can change and what you can evolve in your process.
I love that answer. That's why we're boys, Dan Denny. All right. So we're just going to sort of wrap up this interview. We like to end everything on just a little rapid fire. So we're going to come at you, just sort of put a fake 60 seconds on the clock until we figure out how to get like sound effects working on a live podcast. But we're just going to just do quick rapid fire. We're going to come at you one by one with some questions and just give us whatever comes to your mind. All right, Dan?
All right.
All right. So what is your favorite email hack?
The Kevin. And That is targeting WebKit with a media query.
Nice. What is your favorite email client?
My favorite email client is Apple Mail, RIP Mailbox, but Apple Mail.
Yeah. What's your least favorite?
Gmail.
Who's your favorite email designer or developer to follow online?
This is awful, but I have to say Kevin Mandeville.
Okay, I don't... It's got to be somebody else.
Okay. Alex Kelly says... So, Alex Kelly.
Who is just on the podcast last week, by the way, and we'll link to that. Yeah. What is your favorite CSS property?
Background size.
Nice. What's your favorite blog?
The Email Action Weekly, but their blog.
It's just Labs.
It's
Action Rocket
Labs. Yeah, Action Rocket Labs. I forget what the name of the blog is. It has a specific name, but it's...
There's the Email Design Review. Is that it?
I think that's their email one. It's wherever they release the hybrid coding.
Okay. Post. Yeah. Just the labs.actionrocket.
Okay. Yeah.
Nice.
What is your favorite email newsletter that you subscribe to?
Oh, the Skim.
Hmm. What is your favorite email of all time, individual campaign?
Netflix sent out this House of Cards one with a cinemagraph where Kevin Spacey is looking down and then he looks up at you right in your eyes. Yeah. Oh man, it was fantastic.
I feel like that's probably at the top of mine and Kevin's list.
That is literally the same answer that I have. Yeah. Literally my favorite one of all time.
It's so good.
So very cool, Dan. Thank you so much for coming here on the podcast and doing this with us, man. This was a ton of fun.
It was fantastic.
So do you have anything that you want to plug before we sign off, website to go to, Twitter, etc.?
I think we covered everything. And not just because I'm on the show, but just because it is really, really helped me. And I've talked to a few other email developers that has really helped. Take the chance to give building out in Builder a try. That would be my big plug. I really think it's that important. And it's that big of a game changer for me.
Cool. Well, thanks for plugging us. Everybody, be sure to give Dan a follow on Twitter at Dan Denny. And we have everything that we talked about in the show notes. So again, just a reminder, you can go to emaildesignpodcast.com to catch every single episode of the podcast and see everything that we talked about here today there. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, and YouTube. Just search for Email Design Podcast. Tweet along with the hashtag Email Design Podcast on Twitter. Interact with everybody talking about the podcast there. And you can also get 14 days of free Litmus. Try it out, like Dan said. So just go to litmus.com/gift card and input the coupon code podcast. Oh, Dan, we need a new tagline with Gmail and inline styles. It used to be keep your table cells aligned and your styles in line. I mean, what would any ideas as to what we should call it from now on?
Oh, man. I am not good with the words. I don't know. At this point, it's write some HTML. Who knows?
I kind of like that.
All right. That's been this edition of the Email Design Podcast. Write some HTML. Who knows?